Welcome to Authors on the Air, everyone. This is your host, Pam Stack. I'm sorry that it's taken so long for us to get going here. A little bit of technical difficulties. I'm going to try to go ahead and reach my guest again. I'm sorry, it seems like both of us are having problems right now. Hold on just one second while we go ahead and get Stephen on the line. Welcome, everyone. This is Pam Stack, your host, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, my guest is Stephen England. We have had some connectivity issues, not with Stephen, but with the studio. So I'm trying right now to get him on the line, excuse me, as we speak. Pardon me. In the meantime, if you watch my Facebook page at all, you'll know that I was at the Southwest Readers Fest this Saturday, and it was magnificent. For all of you who live in Southwest Florida, if you've never gone to this spectacular event, you've missed out on seeing and hearing some of the best authors around. So without further ado, though, let me bring on my friend, who is also the best-selling author of the Shadow Wars thriller series. He's an amazing guy, and I'm glad to welcome him back to Authors on the Air, Stephen England. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back. I'm sorry for the technical difficulties we've had. I owe
you.
No
problem, Pam.
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good, good. I'm so glad to hear it. Tell me what's new and exciting since we last spoke, which felt like 100 years ago. You have so many books out right now that it's hard for me to keep track of how fast you're writing and what you're writing. You don't necessarily change genres, but you certainly do change series a little bit, don't you?
I've done some of that, yes. Right now I'm working on the next volume of the Shadow Warrior series, which will be Presence of Mine Enemies.
Uh-huh.
So it continues.
I love that series.
It continues the story from Embrace the Fire and the story of Harry Nichols. So I'm really looking forward to hopefully getting it done sooner rather than later. My books take longer than I wish.
You know, that was one of my favorite books, so I'm really glad that you're continuing on with it. I want to go back, because the last time we spoke, we did not have a lot of time together, but it's really important, I think, for listeners to know a little bit more about you. You are a big-time researcher, and you research everything, but most especially, you research a lot about the Middle East. Where did your interest come from?
Well, I think that interest has been really a part of my life ever since I was quite young. Really with the Middle East being the land of the Bible, and then with as my interest in early childhood, and then by the time I was in my teens, of course, it had become very much a flashpoint of the world with 9/11,
right.
And the war on terrorism that followed. So it really, I think each of the interests fed off each other, and I had an interest in writing from, a very young age, and that came together. So,
when you decided to write, you chose thrillers. You're very, very good at it, and your reader and your Amazon reviews say so. You have overwhelmingly 5 stars in your reviews. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I want to talk
People
to you
very
first.
Kind.
Well, you know, they're not kind unless they like the book. And you know it's a fickle world out there in book review land. I don't have to tell you. But but I want to talk a little bit first, because I think one of the ways we may have all gotten together was talking about Perseid Collapse and Jet and those that books that were in Kindle World.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I did not realize that you had written three novellas or novels. I'm not sure. I think it's a novella for Kindle World.
Yes.
For Jet, for Russell Blake's Jet series. That it seems to me that those stories are right up your alley.
They were. I was very pleased when Russell Blake launched his Kindle World, and I was actually one of the launch authors with the first episode of the Line of God trilogy. And I was very
right.
pleased with the opportunity, because with the guidelines that he had put out for the world, I was able to bring in, to really mesh the two series, because the Line of God trilogy takes place in late 2000, early 2001, basically in
mm-hmm.
the month, the year to the month leading up to 9/11.
Right.
And the opportunity was given there to not only use Blake's characters from the Jet series, as I'm sure many of your listeners are quite familiar with, but also
oh, yes.
bring in some of the backstory for characters out of my own Shadow Warriors series. And the combination of the two, it really gave me a very unique experience to go back and say, okay, here's where my characters are when the main Shadow Warriors series begins, which I've
mm-hmm.
always been rather ambiguous about that date, but we can say present day. Let's go back 15, 16 years and see where they were before 9/11. And so you go back and you meet characters from Pandora's Grave, one of the Israeli intelligence directors. You meet the CIA director in Pandora's Grave and the Shadow Warriors series, David Lay, actually as it had been already established in Pandora's Grave. At the time that Line of God takes place, he was the CIA station chief in Tel Aviv. And so he becomes a major, really one of the three dominant characters of the Line of God trilogy. And you get some insight into, okay, who was this guy 15, 16 years ago? Who was he before 9/11? Who was he before he became the director of the CIA? And it really, I really felt it gave readers a very unique look. In some ways, I felt it anchored people all the more in the world, because one of the key things I've driven at with the series is that my characters don't just come into the books for the purpose of being in the book. They have their own history. They have their own history with my other characters, and I try to create this very, very living world that feels like it has its own history. And to me, the Line of God trilogy was a phenomenal opportunity to explore some of that history. I really enjoyed it.
Gave you a lot of creative license, obviously, to
oh, yeah.
Do some things without writing a full book. Now, we should explain that Pandora's Grave is the Shadow Warriors book one, for those
yeah.
of you who are keeping track. And the books have, in my humble opinion, just gotten better and better as they go on.
Well,
I love reading your work. The writing is very tight. I like that. I feel like I could, well, as a matter of fact, I think I read Embrace the Fire first and then went back and started from the beginning. But I don't feel like I lost anything because I did that. Now,
good.
You also did an exercise in short story writing with Talisman, and then you also wrote your own novella, Lodestone, for Shadow Warriors. Is it equally as difficult or easy, as the case may be, to write a short story versus a novella versus a novel? Which do you really like doing the most, And what are the challenges and rewards of each of those?
I really think my philosophy from the beginning has been to try to tell stories at what I feel is their natural length. And so I like the novel formats. Obviously, I have always been able to tell a fairly lengthy story. My books thus far range from about 400 pages to over 600 pages. But
yeah.
I also enjoy the short fiction formats because there are some concepts that I've had for the series that they just it would be unnatural to try to expand them out into a novel format. I mean, it would require padding the book, and the result wouldn't be, as you say, it would not be tight at all.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
for those, it's perfect having the short fiction format to be able to say, okay, here's a story that I really think is important to the series. Often what I've done, it's particularly noticeable in Lodestone. Lodestone takes place in 2006. And again, almost as with the Line of God trilogy, it's me going back in the timeline of the series and saying, okay, here's the history back here between these characters that will influence the interactions in the full-length series. And in Lodestone, it was really the relationship between Nichols, my protagonist, and a British SAS non-commissioned officer. And it really... Lodestone really showcased their relationship and how it had been developed through combat. And then you came in to Embrace the Fire, which takes place almost a decade later. And you see all that unfolds with the relationships between Nichols and that man's family.
I like the fact that you've spaced your short story and novellas in between the novels.
Yes.
It doesn't take away from any of the books. It just is like a heightened background. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And was
that
your intention? Yes.
It truly was.
And it's fascinating. Now, I loved Nightshade, by the way. And for those of you who are listening and who want to just get a taste of what Stephen England's writing is all about, Nightshade, A Shadow Warrior short story, while not the beginning, is certainly available right now for Zip Nada Zilch on the Zond.
Yeah.
And I suggest you go there. It's a really delicious way to start this series. And by the by, none of these books are ridiculously priced. If you're a Kindle Unlimited member, you're going to get a delightful read, trust me. And don't let Stephen scare you by saying his novels are 400 to 600 pages. They fly by. They really do. They go by really fast especially when you get started on, you just don't want to put the book down. Because I'm a little bit prejudiced. I like your book so much, so you'll excuse me for saying.
No.
I want to kind of move away from books just for a short period of time because I want to talk about your love of dance and the blues. Well, before we go there, I want to say your Facebook page is fascinating to me because you have such interesting quotes from periods of time that I'm unfamiliar with and from people I'm unfamiliar with. So I feel like I go for a history lesson when I read your Facebook page. Will you tell me about, let's talk about that.
And I've tried to get into it even more this last year and try to dig into some of the classics because I really have always, that's how I got into writing years ago was I loved reading. And I think it's very important if you want to be a good writer to have great influences as a reader.
Well, you have to read. You couldn't possibly know how to write if you didn't read. And as a matter of fact, many authors like yourself who come on the show say, I learned my craft in part because You know, I was reading. I've taken apart books, and you know, so it's really interesting to me.
Clancy was a huge influence there for me in my teens. I mean, that was I just devoured his books.
It's interesting. You know, I mentioned earlier before you came on that this weekend was Southwest Readers Fest in Fort Myers, Florida, where I live. And I spoke to Mark Greeny, who actually writes the Clancy novels now. And
yes,
he's written
six
books. And he's really a terrific writer. He's really a nice guy, and he's really tall. So he'll be on this Friday, and I'd love for you to call in and tell him that, because I'm sure he would be delighted to hear it. You know, he'd love that. But let's go back now, because I want to ask you about the blues and about your love of dance. And I love the photo that of you with the hat, the fedora, and you have a vest on, and it looks almost formal to me. It almost looks, but you must be enjoying yourself, because you post a lot of pictures of dance.
Oh yes, it's a more recent addition to my life than reading and writing, but I've always had a love for the music and the culture of the 30s through the 50s, and I learned in my late teens I was learning a lot of the songs of Sinatra, Bing Crosby, the Rat Pack, bunch of others.
And learning
to sing them, not professionally by any stretch of the imagination, but for my own enjoyment. And I love the music so much. Eventually it occurred to me, well, you know, people did dance to this, so I should learn to dance. And that took longer to get around to doing, because I have two left feet. But I did eventually go a little over 2 years ago now to learn to swing dance, and only one of the best things I ever did. So I've enjoyed it.
It's a great way to it's a great way to move your body. It's a great way to get that endorphin relief. Plus, it's fun, and you know, a guy who can dance swing is very much in demand. So I don't know what your marital status is. I don't want to know. I'm just saying, guys like you are in demand. Keep it up. Keep doing it.
Definitely.
Tell me about when you knew you were going to be a writer. When did you know? And how did you know?
I think I dabbled in writing even when I was 12 and 13, to be honest. But I think it was really later in my teens when I knew it was something I had to do. And that really came about more as a, I just came to a place of realizing that if I was going to be happy, I had to write. I mean, it was
really interesting.
I couldn't tell you an exact point in time or a moment, but I think it came about when I had some other things that, of course, in your teens, you're always quite busy. And things kind of were at the point of crowding out some of the writing. And it became something I was thinking about, and I needed to get back to it. And I had all these ideas going through my head, and really just realized, okay, this is something I have to do. It isn't really a choice. It's something I will be doing, as far as I can tell, for the rest of my life. I mean,
I'm glad because you're damn good at it, by the way.
Well, thank you. I've been very pleased by the reception of the series and by the sales of it, but it really, I think I knew from that moment on that whether I ever was successful at it, of course, at the age of 16, 17, you have no idea whether you ever will be, but I realized that whether it was a business or a hobby, it was something I would be doing pretty much till the day I die. So.
Well, I think that's great. I'm glad that, you know, I'm glad you're writing, and I can say that obviously a lot of people are glad, because a lot of people are buying your books. Have you ever had an interest, by the by, in maybe writing in a different genre? Or do you still have too many stories to tell in this one?
I have dabbled with ideas. None of them are ready for prime time, we'll say. But
okay.
there are other thoughts down the road. At the moment, you're largely right. I have enough work planned out with the Shadow Warrior series. I mean, Embrace Presence of Mine Enemies will be the fourth book in the series, and I have at least plans for another four or five more, minimally. So that's, well, at my current rate of progress, that's pretty much the next decade. So I can't plan out too far beyond that. But I certainly wouldn't rule anything out.
Now, you have a book, and I don't know how to say the name correctly, but it's Sword of...
Sword of Naamha. That was my first. It wasn't the first book I ever wrote, but it was the first book I ever published, and it was kind of. I was in my late teens, and really just I'd already been working on the Shadow Warrior series for several years, although in a far different form than it actually ended up being in publication. But I was at a place of really needing a break from it. And so I took a break, and I had an interest at that point in time in history. I've always had an interest in history. But in that time, particularly...
This is history. This is really historical because this is 300 years before Christ. So, you know, that's
yes,
beyond
this
just
is,
an
this
interest
is going
in history.
Back to, this is going back to pre-Roman Britain. And,
wow.
So yes, I decided to tell a completely different story. It's written in a completely different style. First and only time I've ever done anything with first person point of view, and
mm-hmm.
that was certainly a very different experience because my model for the Shadow Warrior series is very much a third person. I wouldn't say third person omniscient, but still very much it moves around from one character to the next. So writing in the with the concept of being confined to one single person's outlook on events was a very fascinating experience, and I've been pleased. Now, naturally, it's not part of the series, so a lot of people
right.
haven't read it. But I've really been pleased by the reception from those who have.
Is the language that you use in, because you have a glossary in the front of this book, I want to assume that those are real words and that you've translated them, but I could be wrong. Is it a language you created, or are those really words that you found in ancient texts someplace during research?
They are borrowed from a research group that I was not involved with, but that I was familiar with. I knew a couple people working on it at the time who were researching the warfare of ancient Gaul and Britain, and so those are based on their research. So yes, they are real. Those words come, including Naamha itself, comes from ancient Gaelic. Naamha, I believe, though this has put me on the spot a little bit because it's been years, but I believe Naamha means champion, as I recall.
How amazing. How amazing. This was really a labor of love for you, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. All my books are. They are very much... characters and themes I live with. So yes, they all are.
So Stephen, when you say that you have, you know, four or five more books, or maybe eight or nine, and you'll be writing for a long time, do you have your series plotted out in any way, shape, or form? Do you keep any type of a storyboard for your books and what's happened? Do you know what you're going to write about? What that process of selecting the storyline is about for you?
My process is very much is a very chaotic one, to be honest. When it comes to future books in the series, I have a general, I have an idea of where I want to hit the series. But as far as specific, like, book-by-book outlines, I don't, I have an idea where the book after the next book goes. But specifically, no, not in any organized, confined terms, so to speak.
So, do you, am I to assume you're a pantser, not a plotter?
Yeah, that would be a correct assumption, yes. Yes,
so
and really,
you must have a lot of ideas, because these stories lend themselves to being able to go covertly any place in the world. So you don't have to stay in one particular part of the world. Your characters can go where they are needed, even though you're, so far you've based everything in the Middle East. Do you have multiple storylines running in your head, and then you have to sit down and decide which one to pursue?
I think really, of course, as you know, there's often multiple storylines in each book, and that's
right.
What I'm wrestling
yes,
with right now with Presence Among Enemies, is working through those and making sure they all come together correctly. But really, I think, and this is where I, like I said, I do have a general idea where I want to take the series, because
uh-huh.
really beyond just telling the story of the Shadow Warriors and the war on terrorism from the eyes of one man, it really is the story of Harry Nichols himself. I mean, he's a 15-year
yes.
veteran of the agency. By the time you get to Embrace the Fire, and this isn't, it's a minor spoiler, but anyone who visits Embrace the Fire's product page can find this out. By the time you get to Embrace the Fire, he's a former CIA officer. And
right.
so I'm looking at telling his story and where the natural consequences take him. Because already, as readers have seen going throughout the series, there are occasions where I try to defy the conventions of the genre a little bit, because there have been many times in the genre when a character it's the reality of the genre. The character breaks the laws. He breaks all sorts of rules, and to accomplish to stop the terrorists, to save the world, et cetera, et cetera. And it's typical in the genre that he faces no consequences for it, or that the consequences
right.
are averted through some, in some way. And
right,
by and
right,
large,
right,
that, that's not been the case for Nichols. His measures that he took, I think readers could say were justified, but they are measures that have very real consequences in the real world. And he's had to pay the price for that. And that's
right.
price that, as readers get to the end of Embrace the Fire, they'll realize he's continuing to pay, because his actions, as justified as they might have been, he is one man, and he makes mistakes. He's not a superhuman. And ultimately, he operates as best he can from point of view, but that is that's not always right, and that's something he has to live with. And I really
Absolutely.
Think that's probably the one thing that I think sets the Shadow Warrior series apart, because anyone who's read the thriller genre knows how it goes. I mean, the hero will
sure.
survive. He faces death, and he comes through. He survives. But the thing
but it's
I've
how
done
he does
the,
it. Yeah.
But the thing,
yeah.
exactly.
It's,
and the
he's not left
the thing,
untouched by what he's gone through. And I think that's what distinguishes your books, because when I read, especially, you know, a series character who seems to get up and brush himself off or herself off and ready to move on to the next adventure without any emotional
exactly.
or physical or professional repercussion, it feels
exactly.
unnatural to me. It doesn't.
And
it feels wrong.
And that's where you touch upon it, because that very idea of surviving, if you look at the real world, what often happens to people who have survived tragic events where people around them did not survive? Well, not everyone reacts. Everyone's different in their psychological makeup.
Absolutely.
So it's very common, whether you're talking about men in the military, even people who survived 9/11. One thing you see consistently throughout their stories is one measure or another of survivor's guilt. And that's something that as you get into the last couple books, Nichols is dealing with in spades, because he's had people die around him for years.
Right.
And it's the nature of
what he's doing, but it does catch up to one, I would imagine.
Yes, and it's not. I wouldn't say that he necessarily has a death wish, although there are moments when readers might think that very much is the case.
Right.
But he's very much in a place of wondering, why me? Why am I still alive? Because he's seen other people die. He's seen people that he believes. He doesn't see himself as a hero. He sees these other people who have died around him. They were better than him. They were more heroic than him, and yet they're dead, and he's still living. And it's something that eats at him. And I really think that is what makes the series distinct, and how it really turns that trope of the genre on its head and says, okay, this guy does survive, but can he survive surviving in some ways?
Exactly. Yeah, I understand exactly what you're talking about. I understand exactly what you're saying there, and I'm glad that you do that. I'm glad because, you know, if there doesn't seem to be a consequence, then it doesn't feel real. It feels
exactly.
Forced or faked, and so you do a very good job with portraying that. I want to commend you on that.
And I really think it does play into how people perceive the series, because I actually got a message from a reader a few months ago, and they had exchanged a couple messages back and forth, and they told me, they said, well, I actually haven't finished Embrace the Fire, because I'm really sorry to let, they're like, I'm a little over halfway through it, and I don't want to finish it because I don't want to let go of Nichols. And I went back and forth with them just a little bit, and it took me a moment to realize where they were coming from. And when I realized it, I told them, I said, you need to go ahead and finish it. I said, it might not end the way you think it does. Because what I realized was they genuinely did believe that Nichols was going to die
Something
at the end
was
of the story,
happen.
And it was
right.
going to be the end of the series. And while I hadn't done that, I thought it was amazing that, given how jaded most people are by what typically happens in the genre, that they genuinely thought he might die at the end of the book. That's a wonderful compliment.
That had to make you feel really good, though. To have someone respond and react that way to a character in a world that you've built. Yeah, that's got to be pretty incredible. I know you like to read an awful lot, too. So who would we find on your bookshelf?
Oh, my. I have thousands.
I know, that's a tough one, isn't it?
So
I understand that. Well, let's do this. Who's on your nightstand right now?
Well, right now I have books I read for pleasure, and I have books I read for research. And right now for a bit of a mix of both, I'm working through Alistair Horn's classic history on the war in Algeria in the 1950s, the Savage War of Peace. And that is partly for pleasure, partly for research, because Presence of Mine Enemies takes place in Belgium and France. And so it's very important in going into that to understand really France's own history of counterinsurgency and its history with the Islamic world, which is heavily influenced by the colonization of Algeria from the early 1800s on through the war in the 1950s. And also along that line is Jean Lacheguy's classic novel from that time period, first published in France, The Praetorians, which is a novel on the French military during that time period. So those are kind of my research books.
What
but
about
I'm,
for
I'm,
pleasure?
I'm also, I've also been digging my way through Homer's Iliad, and that's been a pleasurable read all its own. I'm really enjoying
You're too intellectual for me, Stephen. I have to tell you, you're way too intellectual for me. I'm a genre fiction lover, and you know, I'm so glad that you write books that I love, and I will continue to read. Thankfully, thank you for those. We're just because of the foul up in the studio, and I have to apologize for that. But you're going to come back because I want you to come back and pick an author to interview, okay? And I'm going to give you the microphone and turn it over to you. I think
I'm
that
would
be interesting
because
you're so intelligent and you know so much about history, and I know none. I mean, I just know none. That's it. I know
what
I read in
your books.
We all have
our passions, and history's been mine since I was a kid.
Well, and thank God for that because your books are fantastic. But let's try a little final five, okay? So five quick questions and five quick answers, and we'll see. So let's say in an alternate universe, there's no such thing as writing. What would you want to attempt to do? What other profession would you like to try?
That is a really tough question. If writing wasn't an option, I think I'd still stick with fiction and go into politics.
I love that answer. Perfect. That worked for me. Tell me something on your bucket list. What's on your bucket list?
I'd say probably one thing on my bucket list would be definitely visiting the Middle East myself. That's one thing I've not done for all my research, and I'd definitely like to do it. Of course, I'd have to be careful what countries I visited, or it might end up being the
Absolutely.
Last item on my bucket list. So.
It may well be. Do you speak any other languages, Stephen?
I do not. I've dabbled with a little bit of picking up words here and there, largely for my research. But as far as speaking or reading with any fluency, no.
See, I can cuss in five languages, but that's about the extent of it. So, I get you. So, what would we be surprised to learn about you?
What would you be surprised? Well, people who don't know me at all might be surprised to learn that I dance, but we've already touched on that. Probably more people would not know that I sing. So, that's one thing. That's one thing. I try to do a variety of things. I enjoy singing. I enjoy cooking. So there's a lot I enjoy.
Oh, so you have a lot of creative pursuits then. Is anybody else in your family creative in any way?
Oh yes, I wouldn't say in quite the same way.
But they are creative.
Yes, I would say so. Yeah.
Wonderful. So my final question to you is, when were you comfortable enough to call yourself author?
You said when was I?
Yeah. So in other words, when someone asks you, what do? You say I'm an author or do you say I'm a writer?
I typically use author, and I basically have pretty much ever since I was published. Because I kind of viewed that as the line of demarcation between I write and okay, I've actually had something out there that people are buying and reading, and that was
told me that because very few people answer honestly like that. They always say, "Oh, I'm a writer," versus I'm an author, because I think it does make a difference. When you're published, you have the title and you should wear it proudly, right?
Right, and I think probably one of the reasons I began doing it is I realized if I just told people, okay, I'm a writer, well, in the 21st century, that can mean most anything. You write blog posts, you're a journalist, it's a very imprecise word, where if you say I'm an author, okay, that instantly signifies if you published a book, and all they really need to know then, it narrows their line of questioning to, okay, do you write fiction or nonfiction? So that's kind of my rationale behind it, but yes.
Interesting. Very interesting. Very interesting. Stephen England, I am so glad that you and I had a chance to chat. Will you come back and talk to me again?
I certainly will, Pam. It's been a lot of fun.
I'm sorry that we started so late, but we've
no
gotten
worries.
In our time, and I'm really glad about that. And I'm going to be in touch with you again, as you know, because you and I talk back and forth a lot. But I want you to think about an author that you want to interview, and let's make that happen sometime soon, okay?
Definitely. That sounds like a plan. Thanks
tell
so
everybody
much.
Where they can find tell everybody where they can find you on the web, please.
Okay, you can find me at my website at www.stephen, that's Stephen with PH, stephenwrites.com. And you can also look up my author page on Facebook, which is just at Stephen England. And I'm also on Twitter at Stephen M. England. So there's all sorts of ways to look me up.
I highly recommend you go to his website and see what Stephen's all about. Some really interesting stuff in there, and a lot of it, a lot of background and a lot of history, and it's wonderful. Stephen England, best-selling author of the Shadow Warriors thriller series, thank you so much for being my guest tonight.
Thanks for having me, Pam.
You have much success with your next book, as always. You're absolutely welcome, my friend. Take care of yourself, Stephen. Good night.
You as well. Night.
And I'll be back at 8 o'clock with KJ Howe. You're going to really like hearing what she has to say. Thanks for being with me all. Have a good night.